Hello, everyone. I'm Nadim Porter de Leon at Porter de Leon on Twitter, and welcome to episode 123 of In Tech We Trust. On this show, we look at how software-defined networking has brought about a revolution in that space by simplifying what used to be a series of manually intensive, repetitive processes.
I've been a proponent of SDN for a very long time because it just seems completely ridiculous to me that you would have to do the same thing over and over and over again, fat fingering each thing slightly differently along the way, and then do it in a slightly different way for a different vendor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? That's silly.
And we ask the question, does this technology provide more simplicity, or can it also introduce a new layer of complexity?
So I think the programmability is important to have. It may add complexity, but as long as you don't require the programmability, right? So you could go in and just use the GUI if you want to.
We also ask some of those same questions about virtualization and find out what new things that those in the VMware community should be looking to learn about.
As technology continues to move, you have to continue to move. You have to continue to learn new things. You have to continue to be open to new ideas. And if you do that and you do that correctly, then you know you won't become obsolete.
As a technology, software-defined networking, or SDN as it's more commonly referred to, was a radically different approach to computer networking that allows network admins to have a programmable interface to manage network behavior via open interfaces and the abstraction of lower-level functionality. Now, the origins of SDN began soon after Sun Microsystems released a little thing they called Java in 1995, which was the year that this, among other terms like software-defined radio, were coined. But there's another popular term that goes even further back, which has been coined on multiple technology fronts, and is something called the complexity gap. This phrase has many meanings in many contexts, from big data to information security to medical differential diagnosis. But as far back as 1990, IBM published a paper called A Time Complexity Gap for Two-Way Probabilistic Finite State Automata, talking about randomization with references to Turing's AI problem. And in 2010, yes, 2010, IBM also came out with a study based on interviews with more than 1,500 CEOs from 60 countries and 33 industries worldwide. And more than rigor, more than management, discipline, integrity, or even vision, they believe that successfully navigating an increasingly complex world will require the utmost attention and creativity. Today, that conversation hasn't changed. And as IBM Business Services executive said, CEOs know they need to prepare for a future in which disruption is pervasive. Technological advances occur at great speed. Traditional industry classifications no longer exist, and ecosystems revolutionize entire markets. And that's the theme of our show today, complexity. As software is eating the world and more of the human experience as well as the business landscape becomes software-defined, we lose touch with the way in which everything actually works. But is that such a bad thing? As many have often said, you don't need to know how a combustion engine works in order to drive a car. And how many of you feel strongly about needing to know exactly how that latest GE NX jet engine works before you board your next Boeing 747 in order to be comfortable that the plane will get you where you need to go? Today, you can look at the world through the lens of complexity or simply consume everything as a service and decide to see things as they are or not see them. As Thomas Kuhn, physicist, historian, and philosopher famously said, you don't see something until you have the right metaphor to let you perceive it. So how complex is your world? And how much do you feel you need to know about how everything works so that you can make that next step forward with your next new product or your next new company or build that next new layer of complexity on top of the last one? Well, here's what we found.
In Tech We Trust. We're not sure about.
I had the chance to sit down and talk with Lisa Kaywood at Real Lisa C on Twitter, Director of Ecosystem Development for Open Daylight and ONAP at the Linux Foundation, about what her thoughts are on the complexity of software, more complex systems being built and then commoditized, and then more complex systems being built on top of that. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to dig right into you being at the Linux Foundation. And first of all, what is ONAP? I'm not familiar with that.
Sure. So ONAP stands for the Open Networking Automation Platform. And it's basically the merger of OpenO, which is a project that was started under the Linux Foundation to work on networking orchestration, and the open source portion of AT&T's Ecomp project. So those two projects coming together to build kind of a lifecycle orchestration and automation platform for networks and the environments in which they live.
And so that's fairly new, right?
It is. We made the announcement, I think, right before ONS at the beginning of April. So just coming together.
I don't feel so bad for not knowing what that is then. Excellent. So, and then also the Open Daylight Project, which of course is the networking project as well. Maybe you can give me a little bit perspective, because a lot of what we're doing right now is we're abstracting away a lot of complexity. From a user perspective, it seems like things are getting less complex. Things are getting more push button. You want a VLAN. You just say, I just want a VLAN. I don't have to configure it. You want different things within, the network or within storage or within compute. You have virtualization. You have all this abstraction. But the thing is, all of this lack of complexity is actually built on more complexity. And so that once you commoditize this, once you simplify it, then you say, okay, it's simple. It's simple to, ingest things as an API-based service or commodity or resource. Now I can build something even more complex on it, but people are kind of losing the ability to really understand what the fundamental foundations upon which they're building things are, and how they even work. But maybe that's not even necessary anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and I actually wrote about this a couple of years ago. I wrote a blog called something like Meet the New Network, Same Thing as the Old Network, or something very close to that. I've been a proponent of SDN for a very long time because it just seems completely ridiculous to me that you would have to do the same thing over and over and over again, fat fingering each thing slightly differently along the way, and then do it in a slightly different way for a different vendor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? That's silly. So getting to a point where we have a set of abstractions that we can work with in a simplified and standardized way is clearly the right way to go. That doesn't mean, however, that it sweeps away everything that ever happened underneath, right? The protocols are still, what is actually making things happen in the data plane. It may be that over time, as SDN becomes itself much more simplified than it is today, that fewer and fewer people will know the intricacies of this or that RFC. But that's not to say that nobody will ever know them and nobody will ever need to know them. It's just that those will become more specialized skills and fields over time. We're very far away from that at this point. And so, there's a periodic eruption. For example, is the CCIE still relevant, or JNCIE, or whatever your preferred accreditation is? And, I think I've always been on the side that it absolutely is. Such certifications and standardizations tend to be sort of backward facing. They're trailing indicators as opposed to leading indicators. They represent where the majority of the market is today. But they do represent a body of knowledge and a process, an understanding and appreciation of process that is important for, master level technologists and operators. That's not going to go away. SDN operates at a higher level than, sort of the traditional protocol stack. And it is operating with and through those protocols fundamentally. So those protocols don't go away. We are not yet at a point where it's really just as simple as pushing a button. There's still quite a bit of stuff that needs to be worked out in order to make it that simple. But I think we're well on our way at this point. So it's not, it's not that the world is becoming simpler. It's becoming different. We have different tools that allow us to operate at a higher level of abstraction that allows us to do things at greater scale than we were able to do before, because we're getting to a point where we're able to do mass customization relatively easily. But that doesn't mean that the technology itself is any less complex. You're absolutely correct.
That's an interesting take, because I think a lot of people will talk about the abstraction away from that, that control plane or the data plane. But really, that's just, it's making that one task simpler. It's so that you're actually able to do things that literally were not possible before, or were only possible with massive amounts of resources. Like, I liked your example of someone, doing the same thing over and over again, and why that's just absolutely insane. Like, it's almost like, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over again while
fat fingering it differently each time.
Different results, but doing the same thing over again while expecting the same results, that's, I think, the definition of monotony.
Yes, and there's no reason that we should be doing that. there are two things going on, right? One is the abstraction of interfaces and moving towards model-based approaches to our underlying infrastructure so that you can optimize your physical infrastructure separately from the features and capabilities you have. So for example, you might want to invest heavily in high-performance equipment in your web tier if you're an e-commerce company because, you know, latency is a major revenue difference for you. But maybe, you know, stuff in the back office doesn't matter for that, and you're perfectly happy to have white box there, and you really want to be able to have an end-to-end view of everything that's happening across your equipment and across your infrastructure. And previously, that was really not possible because, you know, every vendor had its own, you know, sort of stack, not just the stack with for their own equipment, but all the way up the management stack. And, you know, there would be these, you know, massive efforts involving, you know, millions of dollars going to SIs to kind of try and knit it all together. And so getting to a point where we sort of have clean, common interfaces, that's a significant step in terms of just making it possible to build large interoperable systems across vendor boundaries, across geographic boundaries, across business process boundaries. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is virtualization, which is, I suppose you could say, is a type of abstraction, but really we're talking about the abstraction of the equipment itself. And so now we're talking about, you know, we saw that obviously first in the server world and then later in storage, and now we're finally starting to see it arrive in networking. And that just, you know, you put that together with the capability of having that end-to-end view across the entire system, and now you can instantiate what you need anywhere when you need it in a much more fluid and dynamic way.
One last perspective from you on that. Once you have that standardization, once you have that end-to-end view and control, do things at that point for you, do they get less interesting? You move on to something else and you're like, okay, SDN's done and now I'm on, or are you really invested in maturing that once that's established?
For a long time, people would think SDN was OpenFlow and OpenFlow was SDN. OpenFlow is a protocol, one among many others. SDN is a set of tools and techniques that allow you to get to the point where your network, for example, is logically centralized and programmable. And that, in turn, allows you to think about much higher order things. So it's one, it's, you know, it's progressively larger pieces of a puzzle. It's not an end in itself.
Yeah, building blocks.
Building blocks.
And there's no end to that. You can just keep stacking them up.
We can keep stacking them up. But here's the real thing. And you know, you go to a tech conference in the US and people will talk about, oh, in my implementation of this, you know, I was able to shave, you know, 37 microseconds off of my latency, or I, you know, maybe they'll even save, I was able to save, you know, $10 million in WAN costs or whatever. You go to conferences in China and they talk about, well, we need SDN and NFV in order to make our network sufficiently agile to do the things that we need to do in, for example, the IoT space so that we can improve traffic congestion in our cities and measure sound congestion and in order to be able to modify that and take steps to improving things and monitor, you know, air pollution and use that as a feedback loop in among one of many other things as part of our overall smart cities initiative. And it just goes on and on from there, right?
Those are really powerful conversations.
Yeah. Right. They're really thinking in terms of what's the real end goal here? What's the thing that actually touches ordinary human lives? And what can we do in service of that? And it's not that people here don't eventually get there if you like lead them down the path, but we tend to be focused on technology much more kind of for the sake of technology. Because of that, people sort of tend to lose sight of, well, it's really complex and is it worth it? Because those steps are, you know, often several steps removed from where they sit right now. But it is important to see the big picture. And the fact that we have now the capability of building these systems, again, across all these different types of boundaries in a very fluid way, I think really calls people to think bigger beyond sort of their own particular little niche or their own particular company.
Lisa, fantastic conversation today. I think you've given us a lot to think about, and I've actually walked away with a lot. Thanks for joining the show. Appreciate it.
Thanks again for having me.
Next on the show, I get to sit down with my co-host, Lauren Malhoit, at Malhoit on the Twitters, and talk about software-defined networking and some of the complexities, or maybe even the reduction of complexity that that's providing people. Lauren, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. I'm here in New York battling a cold as you know, flying a lot makes you have all the time, but I'm doing well. Can't complain.
Yeah, under the weather, but still making it on the podcast. That's what I'm talking. That's dedication.
You know me. After I rescheduled like 3 times. Yeah.
So I wanted to just pick your brain a little bit, since complexity is the theme of this show, about software-defined networking. And some people have been really excited about this. Actually, a lot of people were really excited about it because it has reduced some of the ways in which a lot of things had to be done manually, and it's reduced the complexity. Or do you feel like it's not actually a question of complexity, really more of a question of capability, and it's allowing people to do things they couldn't do before? Is it maybe a bit of both?
It's been around for a long time, right? Like, we've had OpenFlow for several years. ACI and NSX have been around for at least 3 years or so now. And everyone... The complexity comes in where every brand is different, right? And handles things differently and has different terminology. But then even if you pick a certain product, say ACI or something, just because that's what I'm familiar with, you do have to learn. There's a learning curve there too. So there's some complexity added there. But I think what actually diminishes this complexity then is once you get over that hump, that learning curve, then things become easier. We've taken away the box-by-box configuration. We've maybe added some features, some new things. But really, I think the key is that you're taking away the time that it takes to do the manual tasks every day, right? But that is what we're talking about. And that's part of the complexity, is the, you know, box-by-box configuration, the knowing all the different command line, you know, whatever, knowing how to do the firewall and the load balancer and all the different devices that go along with it. You know, with a lot of the software-defined stuff, we take that away because we're doing it all from a centralized controller.
So really, it's not a matter of complexity. It's more a matter of learning curve and maybe just familiarity. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of that theme of change where it's something new, yes, and that may be daunting in and of itself, but it's not something right. That actually is more complex. It's actually once you know where the buttons are,
right. You've
actually got a much less complex framework to work from.
And people that already know the foundation, right, how networks work, you know, they know what's going on, right? They know what it's actually doing. From a controller standpoint, though, you may have only had to click one button, and that might configure, you know, 20 lines in the command line behind the scenes.
And that was a much different, I mean, before, kind of give maybe some people who are just getting to know software-defined network, and I know you and I know that it's been around for a while, an idea of what really what's the big shift that's made, especially now that it's been around for a while? What's that big shift in both mindset and capabilities that's really happened with SDN, and why was it created, and kind of what's it doing?
So think of your physical hardware, your physical network, right, as an underlay. That's what we're calling it in our SDN world. And you want that to be pristine. You don't really want to mess around with it too much. You just want to cable it up. You want it to work. You want it to forward frames, as networks should. Then on top of that, we want to do an overlay. Now, overlays come in different, you know, varieties, but tends to go towards VXLAN these days. So once we put in that overlay is where we're going to be making changes if we need to. That overlay is where we're going to be applying policies, applying security, doing several different things. Of course, you know, there are actual command line configurations done to the physical switches, but we're doing it all from a controller. We don't have to go onto each box like we used to, or create these long scripts for each box like we used to. And it's a lot easier, so it's basically self-documenting. You don't have to, you know, even if you did create a script and you had some sort of orchestration, let's say, on your network, you know, that's going to change. It's going to be problematic when you have a new network administrator or network engineer coming in and trying to use that. With controllers, we don't get those same issues. And we get to bring in other layer 4 through 7 services as well. So if we want to bring in firewalls and load balancers and all the stuff that applications absolutely need, right? An application isn't just a bunch of servers with different services running. It's also all of the different stuff in between those tiers to make it more secure, to make it run more efficiently. And it brings all of that together and allows us to be network engineers as well as better IT departments, because really what's important is the application, right? That's where we're making our money.
Exactly. I mean, ultimately, that's where we want to be able to provide that kind of flexibility and that kind of enablement, and also simplicity, and be able to spin stuff up, change stuff faster, replicate faster. So let me throw out one thing at you. I'll put you on the spot, Lauren, because there's an interesting article in TechTarget talks about software-defined networking. You know, complexity is actually a bit of an issue, and they're talking about how programmable virtual networks have actually become or more complex, or programming this stuff has become more complex, and programmability introducing complexity, but you also have different conception models that actually creates that sort of simplicity and reduces complexity.
Yeah, to me, that's the beauty of it, right? Having those open APIs, and by that I don't mean open source, but open to the public, or there's documentation available to the public so that you can utilize the REST APIs available, I think is very important, because people do want to code it all these days. You know, you look at like a Netflix or something like that, it, you know, forget DevOps, we're talking about NoOps, and it's all coders, but they need infrastructure, you know, right? But they're programming it all. But, you know, there are other people, middle of the road people, that are using REST APIs to just automate, even though some of the mundane tasks have already been automated just by virtue of going to SDN, they're automating even more repeatable tasks using the programmability, using either, you know, Python scripting or Puppet, or even just some sort of orchestrator. So I think the programmability is important to have. It may add complexity, but as long as you don't require the programmability, right? So you could go in and just use the GUI if you want to, and just click buttons, do things like that, where I can configure my entire network. It's not required that I know programmability to configure an advanced feature, but that option is available. And I really do think that the option should always be available. It should always be open, whether you're an employee or a customer or a partner. And there might be some complexity there, but it's not required, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the big takeaway, is that what you get with the SDN is you get a way in which to consume or configure these types of things on a sort of a repeatable basis or a consistent basis with a GUI. And I think a lot of people are excited about the fact that you don't have to be able to dig super deep into the programmability of advanced features. You can actually use a GUI, and that's where that abstraction layer is coming into place. And a lot of different things that are calling themselves software defined, they're taking away that complexity and putting a GUI on it. Is that a good way to look at it?
Yeah. And I mean, there's command lines still available too for those diehard command line junkies. You know, that's still available in at least in ACI. I can't speak to the others just because I don't know it as well. But to me, it's important to have that GUI too.
Well, that's great. Lauren, what do you think that first step would be for someone who is kind of looking to get more into SDN and kind of understand sort of how simple it actually can be?
Yeah, absolutely. So it depends on what you're interested in pursuing, you know, what kind of hardware you have in your data center, you know, whether that's Cisco or others. I'm trying not to be a Cisco shill, so, or at least not totally, right? I'll try and be well-rounded.
Yeah. I can vouch for the fact that Lauren is not reading Alpha Solutions brief right now.
For Cisco ACI, you can go to something called dCloud. It's like Demo Cloud, dCloud, and it's open to the public, and you can find ACI demos in there. And actually, it's like an open world environment where you can click around. For VMware NSX, you can go to the hands-on labs for VMware. I'm sure if you Google hands-on labs and find an NSX lab or two, and those are open labs as well, generally. Basically, just, you know, go to any like Pluralsight or one of the big computer-based training sites. I would check those out as well. And, you know,
anyone you know create a Pluralsight training course?
I'm trying not to self-plug as well, but yes, I do.
Sorry,
have a few
listeners out here. Lauren Malley does have a Pluralsight course on there. Please go on and check it out.
There are three. They're all ACI, but yeah, and there are some NSX ones out there from Jason Nash as well. So, you know, I'm trying. Those are the two big ones, and of course, OpenFlow has been around for a while too. But, you know, I would suggest those places first.
No, that's great, Lauren. It's fantastic. Well, thanks for jumping on the show with me again, and I'm sure we'll chat again soon.
Thank you, Eudine. Appreciate it.
Next, I had the chance to sit down with Aaron Bolthouse at bhouse563 on Twitter, who is the manager of IT infrastructure at HatCo and on the steering committee for the Wisconsin VMUG, where we talk about the changes to the VMware user community. Then we had a chance to chat about virtualization and abstraction layers, technology, and how those are just the beginning. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So there was a little bit of change announced at Dell EMC World that I heard and a few people covered. And maybe for our listeners, Aaron, can just give a quick sort of snapshot about what's changed with Dell Communities and how that's affecting the VMware user group VMUG.
Yeah, absolutely. So at Dell EMC World, the VMUG heads up, got up on stage and, you know, kind of broke the news that they're bringing the VMUG community into the larger overarching Dell technology user community. The kind of the idea behind that is to take the blueprint of working user community like VMUG and assist these other pieces within the Dell technology user stack that might not be performing as well as they could be. The ideas that VMUG brings to the table, the resources that VMUG brings to the table, and the resources that these other user communities also bring to the table for VMUG to utilize under this big umbrella really seem to be the core ideals behind what they're trying to accomplish with this change.
And so does this bring a little bit, it sounds like it actually might not be bringing out more complexity, you know, as this theme of our show, it might actually be simplifying things a bit. Do you see it that way from the VMUG perspective? Is it simplifying things and maybe making it so that you actually have more resources throughout sort of the Dell community's landscape? And, or is it creating more complexity and sort of governance on top of something that was simple before?
Well, you have, you know, an idea and a goal, and then you have the reality of the situation, right? So you make these changes, and there's always growing pains. There's always learning curves. There's pieces that weren't anticipated. There was a bit of a backlash from the VMUG leader community, I know, on this decision, and there were some issues with communication from VMUG HQ on this problem. Those are getting sorted out, from what I understand. In the conference calls that I've been on, it seems like they're kind of trying to realign with the goals they've been with previously when it comes to putting the user first in VMUG. But I think overall, it's a good move. It's not like you can flip a switch and just make everything easier. It's gonna add governance. It's gonna add a little bit of red tape. It's gonna add different pieces that make things that were previously easy a little bit more complex. But overall, that added complexity will, in my eyes, eventually lead to simplifying different things down the road with the added resources, with the different pieces that these Dell user communities bring to the table.
All right. Well, that provides a little bit of clarity for that. And just pivoting a little bit too on this idea of, you know, simple versus complex. In your experience now, you've been in virtualization, working in the VMware community. You've helped a lot of people too, actually, level up and gain skill in that regard. From a technology perspective, though, are you feeling like VMware as a technology and a company has started to become that thing that was an enabler first to, you know, to help, you know, utilization, to maybe create some simplicity? Do you feel like that's then now sort of this new layer of sort of either, you know, abstraction or, you know, a complexity that's being built and now commoditized, and now sort of more complex systems are being built on top of that? Or do you feel like it's actually moving in the direction of just things are becoming more simple and moving in that direction of simplicity?
Yeah, I think that it's kind of, again, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B here, right? So you're sitting here with VMware, and they took, obviously, virtualization and commoditized hardware through abstraction. Now the target's moved. These customers are moving towards AWS. They're moving towards Azure. They're moving towards the cloud in different ways. And VMware's previous cloud offering, vCloud Air, kind of dead on arrival. So in order to really compete in that space, it seems what they're doing is taking those different places that customers are already going, and they are allowing VMware to run within those platforms. You're seeing things like vSphere on AWS. You're seeing, I just saw the other day a piece come out about you know, the possibility of moving to Azure with Horizon as a start for that, to do DAS in Azure. And you see things like them moving forward with IBM SoftLayer to provide a stronger backend to something that they tried to push out to begin with. And when they move to the cloud, you're simplifying your ability to move back and forth through the VMware technology. You have your on-prem situation with your hosts and your VMware environment. If you have that infrastructure, that software layer, as you'd put it, on the back end in the cloud, then you're using the same tools. You're using those different VMware pieces to manage that cloud environment, whereas before, you're having to learn a whole brand new skill set. You're having to learn AWS. You're having to learn Azure. You're having to learn all these different pieces. And the idea here is to simplify those moves for the people who have become ingrained in the VMware environment. Now, you know, that being said, you're stacking it on a cloud instead of hardware. So, you know, as a VMware administrator, you learn the hardware you're stacking your software on. And in this case, you're stacking your software on more software. So there's still a bit of a learning curve there. I do think that it does add a bit of complexity to the setup. But once you're up and running, you're running VMware.
And so I guess one perspective has been sort of proposed to me is that it's a different way of looking at it, not really looking at whether things are simple or more complex. It's basically allowing, you know, capabilities where you didn't have certain capabilities before, certain sure. flexibility, workload mobility that you didn't have with a certain type of architecture that you're having with this type of architecture now in the short term. Like you said, there's that learning curve. So there's a little more complexity from the individual standpoint where you're, okay, things are a little more complex only because they're new. But, you know, once you get over that learning curve, once you understand how to stack, you know, your software on top of software within a cloud environment like AWS, do you feel like there is still an increased amount of complexity within an AWS environment, or really it's looking from that perspective of it's not about complexity, it's more about here's what I can do now versus here's what I could only do before when it was on premise?
Yeah, I think that anytime you add another layer to something, you're gonna add a bit of complexity to it. Allowing those different pieces of VMware softwares to run on the cloud, it's gonna add these different options that VMware brings to the table, right? You're gonna add your vMotion, your Cross VC vMotion. You're gonna allow your workloads to migrate in and out of the cloud much more smoothly than they would if you were doing cross hypervisor migration from on-prem vSphere to AWS, where you're actually making a conversion because those VMs are now AMIs instead, right? You really have to kind of mind the different complexities that AWS has. You know, you have your virtual private cloud networking out there. You have different parts and pieces when it comes to storage, when it comes to how you're accessing that cloud environment from your premises, you know? And so it definitely does add to that stack.
And maybe one final thought to kind of end on for the listeners here. If someone is in sort of that virtualization VMware space, or even if they're what Hyper-V or they're working, you know, with Nutanix or any of those, where do you feel like that attention should start to go? Sort of, and this is sort of that next steps category, maybe a little bit of a crystal ball gazing. Where do you feel like that attention and energy for someone who's in that space, who's passionate about that technology, feel like they need to really move? It sounds like they need to move into more understanding of AWS, more understanding of Azure. Is that where you feel like somebody in that role really needs to start focusing their attention?
Absolutely. You have, a while ago, you had all these Windows administrators that were hugging their physical boxes, right? No, you're not going to rip these out of my dead hands.
Conjure up really wonderful mental images.
Exactly. And then you have you had VMware come in and kind of change the game on that, right? Now AWS is becoming ubiquitous, and there are so many different services that are SaaS services that are already out in AWS, and you see exactly how that's working for them, and you really begin to understand just the importance of understanding these new technologies, whether that's AWS, whether that's Azure, whether that's any of these cloud pieces. You have to kind of start to focus a little bit of your gaze out there, or else you'll become, as a VMware administrator, you'll become those old Windows physical box huggers, right? And so as technology continues to move, you have to continue to move. You have to continue to learn new things. You have to continue to be open to new ideas. And if you do that and you do that correctly, then, you know, you won't become obsolete.
And so once the thing you're working on starts to be referred to as legacy, it starts to send chills down your spine. Now, I think you have this perspective to close out on this idea. Are people who are in this space already, are they really seeing this move to AWS, Azure, this cloud? Is this kind of a scary thing? I know change is always scary. New things are always, you know, a little bit jarring. But is this really a tectonic shift for them? Or does this feel like, you know what, this isn't too new. This isn't too weird. This isn't too outside the box. This actually feels like something that might be comfortable for me.
The ideas are the same behind the scenes, right? It's learning policies to get the ideas to come to fruition. None of it is really, you know, groundbreaking, brand new technology. It's just the same ideas implemented in a different way. So if you understand the basic principles of virtualization, you understand cloud. You do.
So I mean, anyone listening to this would basically, who might have some trepidations about cloud, they should really just sort of take a deep breath and say, no, this is just, you know, the buttons are just in different places.
Yeah, I think so. From my personal experience on this and my professional experience on this, I would say that is right on. It's all the same principles, and it's just in a different box. Instead of being in that physical server in your closet in the back, it's out, you know, on somebody else's computer.
Excellent. Well, fantastic conversation, Aaron. I appreciate your point of view on this, and I think there's some good perspective you bring from the VMUG community. Thanks for joining the show today.
Appreciate it.
And that's our show for this week. If you haven't subscribed already, please do so on iTunes or on the podcatcher of your choice, and leave us a review if you will. It helps others find us. Also, we want to hear from you, your story ideas, your thoughts on the tech world and what you're doing as well, so that we can make this show as relevant for your daily tech life as possible. So hit us up on the Twitter using #InTechWeTrust. We'll be checking that now daily to start conversations, engage with people, and get your thoughts. You can also follow us at @InTech_WeTrust on the Twitters and give us your thoughts there as well. See you next time.